Okay. So we are in Frankfort at the Kentucky Historical Society on May 24th. I am Mandy Higgins interviewing Gina Hudson for the Mask Maker Quilt Oral History Project. And we just like to start with you spelling your name so that all of our stuff is correct.
Okay, so it's G-I-N-A-H-U-D-S-O-N.
Wonderful. Welcome. Thank you for sitting with us. We're going to start before COVID. Just a little bit, if you can remember all the way back there.
There was a time.
There was a time. When did you begin to sew?
I did my first quilt when I was 8. I was staying with my grandmother over the summer, and my great aunt thought I was too handsy and busy, and she was like, you need to get that child something to do. So she gave me some dresses to cut up, and I made a little quilt. And then I kept on sewing until, oh, goodness, about 20 years ago, then I stopped, and then COVID happened, so picked it right back up again. So it's been a off again, on again romance with sewing all my life.
Do you do other crafting?
I do. I sew full-time now. The whole mask making kind of started a business, and now I'm at the Berea Farmers Market, and I just sew whatever I want, which is nice and fun and get to be creative.
Yeah. Were you self-taught in sewing, or were you taught by your great aunt?
My aunt was a professional sewist, so she taught me how to use a machine. And for the most part, though, I taught myself more of the technique along the way, but there's been help. You know, there was always sewing in the house. My mom sewed some, and it wasn't a foreign concept.
And so you said you took this sort of 20-year break before 2020. What were you making when you were sewing?
Like cosplay things, you know, Halloween costumes. I think we ended up on the front page of the paper 4 or 5 times for the costumes I made over the years. And, you know, just household things and, you know, just anything that would just be fun. Never thought it would be a business, but never thought it'd be a quilt.
Were you involved in groups or communities before the pandemic for crafting, sewing, cosplay?
Not really. I was more of a loner. I mean, there were some, like, smaller crafting groups that I'd pop in and out of, but nothing stable.
Were those groups in person?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, like, library groups and, you know.
That sort of thing. Would you consider yourself pretty involved in those groups, or was it...
No, I've always been more of just kind of a loner as far as, you know, the pandemic didn't bother me that much. So let's put it that way. I was happy to sit at home. But, yeah, I was never, yeah.
So switching gears a little bit then, the pandemic didn't bother you too much, but how did you learn about COVID?
I actually caught on way earlier because Trevor Noah.
Okay.
He was on it long before, you know, anybody else had heard of it. And so I started watching, like, the national news and international news, and I was like, something wicked this way come. So I was like, yeah, it's not going to be long. We better start battening down the hatches over here.
Do you remember about what time of year the Trevor Noah started?
I want to think it was maybe February, late January. I was just like, okay, that's something wrong here.
Do you remember how that sort of, you said something's wrong. Did it start to scare you? Was it a, just like, oh, I'm going to start paying attention?
Well, when I started watching, like, the international news, and then they're like, this stuff is going down in Iran, and they're, like, making mass graves, and, like, stuff's hit the fan in Italy. I'm like, this is a very small world. So, you know, if things are happening in Iran and Italy, it's not going to be very long until... So, yeah, it scared me a lot.
Yeah. When Kentucky's first cases were announced, how were you feeling?
It's a double-edged sword there because, you know, you're terrified. You're like, okay, well, it's not going to happen to me because I live in little nowhere land Berea, but then, you know, it's going to affect you. And the governor was such a wonderful place to land because I think he handled everything really well, and he made people feel calm and, you know, like, okay, I'm going to give you the facts, you make it what you will. And there was a lot of trying to stay calm, but knowing that something was just wrong with the world, and you do what you can to help, but sometimes it's not much other than sewing masks.
Yeah. In that March or April of 2020 period, is there anything that stand out as like big memories, like a signpost?
Oh, goodness. Well, our neighbor got it early, and he had a very long journey. He's still dealing with it, but I went to school with his wife, so I've known her for ages, and it terrified me, you know, that this was going on. And then we had friends in Peru, and Peru was getting really bad. And I remember one night I went up to the front porch, and I just bawled and cried because, you know, our friends in Peru, they already have issues insanely there. And then, you know, it was getting to be their bad time of the year for food. And I just bawled because I was like, now they got to deal with this other stuff. And they can't even have access to groceries. And as bad as it was thinking about what's going on here, I felt really bad that I didn't have it as bad as my neighbor who was really sick, or our friends in Peru who were dealing with a lot more. So kind of a pre-survivor's guilt was going on, and it makes you feel bad that you don't feel worse.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned that you didn't know what to do, but you could make masks.
I could do that.
So when did you start making masks?
About the second I figured I could help. I mean, there were, you know, they said it's communicable through your mouth, so, you know, cover it. Okay, we can do this. And so I watched a couple of videos, and, you know, there were people that had different patterns, and they're like, this one is good for this, and this is it. So I just started doing them for people locally, because, you know, they can just come by my house and take them off my mailbox, and I'm made like put nails in my mailbox so people just come by and take one if they needed it. And my neighbor runs the food bank, so I've made hundreds for him that they could give out for people, because if you can't afford your groceries, how are you going to afford to go buy masks? So that it just became what I did all day long, every day, and I don't regret it. I only did about 5,000 of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did you, so you said people had patterns. Was this through Facebook? How did you learn about the patterns?
There are a lot of different really great sources out there for printable patterns. And I finally found one that I really, really liked. I think it was just a Google search maybe, or maybe it was a YouTube tutorial. I don't recall exactly where I got it, but.
What did you like about that pattern?
The fit. What it was like, the piano accordion style ones just didn't feel like they fit right, and the ones I made were like more contoured and more snug, so kind of felt like that would be more better coverage with the closer the fit. I mean, you can't make a N95, but you can get real darn close.
How did you test them?
I saw a video that was like, you know, if you can blow a candle through it, it's not effective at all. So I started, I'd make them and test them and like try to blow a candle out. And when it wouldn't flicker, I was like, this is the one. There's nothing getting through this sucker. So.
So you mentioned earlier also, before we started recording, that it was difficult to find supplies. Can you talk a little bit about that?
There was a bit of a shortage. I mean, first of all, so many of the hobby stores, you know, Joann's and our local craft store was shut down. You just couldn't get it. If you didn't have material, there was a couple weeks right at the very beginning that you weren't getting any if you didn't have it. And then there was a cotton shortage several years back. So any backlogs on that was, the cotton has gone up ridiculously in price over the last couple of years. But, you know, after you get over that hump, I had several people who were also sewists or retired sewists who are like, hey, I've got a couple bolts, you know, you want to take this? Yes, I will. So I had a lot of donations from people because I hadn't sewn in ages, so I didn't have a stockpile of anything just on hand. A lot of the other people that were in the group did, you know, because that's what they did beforehand. So
was it mostly the cotton fabric, or were there also supply issues with other pieces like the...
Good luck finding that elastic. That was difficult to find the elastic, but Amazon came through. As much as I don't like to use Amazon, they came through and I found an elastic that was perfect for it. So,
what made it perfect?
It was really thin, round, where a lot of people were using the quarter inch, like flat type, and that doesn't feel very good against the back of your ears. So, I found the kind that was a bit softer, less aggressive to the back of your ears. People had to wear them like all day at work. I mean, comfort becomes a thing, and I have issues with the irritation by my ears. So,
did you have to do any special sewing to make that different type of elastic fit?
No. Well, the channel on the side, I had to change up the pattern a little bit to make that channel go through so it would be more adjustable. Not everybody has the same size face, mm-hmm. so if it could be, the elastic could be adjusted to fit you better.
Were there other adjustments you made to the pattern as you continued to make those 5,000 masks?
There's always going to be an adjustment. I mean, I was doing from size like 2 years old up to my husband's size, and he's got a big old face. I mean, he's got a massive melon, but he got a kick out of that one. He's got a big old head. So, you know, I mean, if a person said I need something really specialized, I mean, I could make it for him, but there were some people just wanted the plain flat type. I'd make that, whatever. But.
So did you do a lot of masks on request, or were you doing more of the bulk, like, for the food bank?
I did some on request. Mostly it was just like, you know, whatever I'm feeling today, that's what I would make. Put them in baggies, put the size tags on them, and there you go, you know. But, I mean, I had, like, the public library. I made specific fabric for them that had their logo, and the food bank, I made some material for them, had that custom made, and I did some for the farmer's market that had the farmer's market logo. So if somebody wanted something super custom, I could do that for them. But
can you talk to me a little bit about that custom process? How did you get those made?
There's a wonderful company out there that I don't like to plug, but it's called Spoonflower. And any artist can take their artwork and upload it and have their art printed on their fabric. So it was a little expensive, but you know, if you want something one of a kind, that is how you get it.
Is there any special masks? So you talked about your neighbor in the food bank. You talked, you just mentioned a couple other. Are there others that stick out as?
Oh, I did so many donations. It was stupid. I sent several to the local nursing homes. They needed them. Obviously, it was a protected society there as far as their residents. The food bank, I sent several to the library. I mean, anybody that wanted one, I was like, here you go. It only took me a couple minutes to make one. I think I clocked myself at 4 minutes and 32 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah, I was spitting out a lot a day. I also sent like several hundred to it was a equality rally in Richmond. So,
can you tell me a little bit more about those?
They asked me if, you know, it was summer before last, I think, maybe. I can't remember. But they're like, you know, we're going to have several people up here, hundreds of people up here. Can you make us some? Like, okay, you know, protect the, because I support people. I mean, I there does need to be changes in certain parts of society. But at the time, things were really kind of nutty with COVID. So if I could help protect the society a little bit and still be part of, I wasn't going to get in the crowd, but be part of supporting the crowd. Yeah.
Yeah. Did most of your masks stay in Kentucky?
Most of them, I think, probably. I sent several people, would, you know, I met in other groups previously, would, you know, message me and like, hey, can you send me some to Pittsburgh? Yeah, sure. Send me some to Florida. I had a couple people in Florida that were like, they're kids' masks. Can you send some kids' ones? Yeah, so I don't think any really left the country.
But. Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about the Facebook group, the quilt project itself?
Oh, yeah. The group. I I never thought that it would even get off the ground. The day I even thought of the project, a lady who had gotten some masks from me, she messaged me and she's like, can I get some for my friend? She's a nurse at a behavioral health facility, and they gave her one paper mask and she has nothing else, you know, and she's got residents she's got to take care of. So I was like, yeah, come on over, you know, you stay your 6 feet over there. And then my neighbor who runs the food bank came over, because I had some for him too. And we started talking. We were talking about the governor, and I was like, you know, I feel empathy for him, because, you know, that's got to be a tough job. Like, I can't even imagine having to do what he's doing every day. I was like, I should do something nice for him. And we're kind of spitballing. I was like, I could do a quilt. So I had the idea, and then I started, like, asking other mask-making groups, hey, would you like to take part in this? And, you know, other, like, buy-and-sell groups, hey, you know, anybody over here want to help out? But I didn't think there would be hundreds of people who wanted to do it, so I just kind of started inviting people, and it got 200 deep, and next thing you know, people are just mailing packages. I'm sure the postal workers did not like me for a few weeks, but there were a lot of amazing people that came out of the woodwork from across the state. I mean, different backgrounds, and, you know, a lot of them wrote letters to include in the scrapbook, and it made me kind of feel humbled, and I was prepared full on to sew this quilt myself, even though that's not my forte, but I was gonna do it, and thank goodness we got a volunteer.
Ooh. Yeah, so tell me about the process of collecting these squares from the beginning.
The process was that wasn't the hard part. The hard part was explaining, okay, this is, you need to start out with like 9 pieces that are 3 inch by 3 inch, and just put those together. Doesn't sound difficult, but some of the people who were mass making at the time didn't have much of a background in sewing, so they didn't understand, you know, like, you gotta use this seam allowance, and it's a lot more wonky. My husband was really great, and he made the suggestion, you should keep these envelopes, you should make sure you keep these, because one day you're going to go, wow, I did that. And so, you know, like every day, more pieces would come in the mail. Several people who are from Richmond or Berea or locally would just come drop them by on my front porch. And this one lady, bless her heart, she was so sweet. She came by. She left her square on my front porch with a dozen eggs and a thank you note. She has chickens. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that was just so sweet. So, and it was just every day. We'd have more and more packages come in and opening. And at the time, people were like, does it travel by hand? Does it travel? So, like, should we quarantine these? Like, do we leave it out for, do we need to Lysol this? I mean.
Did you do any treatment?
I did. I Lysoled everything. At the time, if you had Lysol, that was your best friend. Because, you know, nobody knew what was going on there, so.
Yeah. So, there are 9... They're 9 by 9 squares.
Well, 3 by 3.
Three
across, three down.
Okay.
And started out at 3 inches per little square.
So. Okay. How many came correct?
Well, this is what I found out after the fact from the lady who quilted it. She's like, here's the problem with quilting. When you start a quilt, you never change your machine. Mm-hmm. You never switch machines. You never do, because you need to have that same exact measurement to keep it flat and straight. And I wasn't a big quilter. I'm more of a hobby sewist. I make what I feel like. So I didn't realize how much difficulty that would be for her, because some of them weren't exactly straight. A lot of them were. I mean, and you look at the quilt, and like the ones with the black things around them, she added that in the end because they were just not square. But I would say probably 80% were like as they should be, or close enough that they didn't require. And Terry might tell you something, she might be like, no, none of them were, but just visually by looking at them, about 80% were right. Not that I would knock anybody, but
right. Can you tell me about your square?
My square. I love mine. My square, the material was donated by a friend of mine who donated a lot of material. She's an older quilter, and she's like, I just can't do it anymore. My hands won't let me. But she quilted quilts for Humane Society and would put those up for auction for Humane Society. And the black and white material from it was designed by a local artist, and it represents Berea. Like, I think the square has, like, the pinnacles are on it, and the silhouette of Daniel Boone, and just different little things that are definitely Berea. The spire from Phelps Stokes, I believe, is on it. And in the middle, there's a piece that represents Richmond. I'm a Berea girl, but Richmond's in Madison County, too, and I was trying to represent my county. And it's got the EKU logo on it, so I kind of went, you know, with mine, I want to represent my county. So, and a lot of the other ones did, too. Like, they put something, I saw a Pulaski and a Bowling Green and a couple different that represented their county as well, so.
Did you give any of those sorts of directions when you asked people to submit squares?
I said if you could, yes. If not, if the only thing you have is this scrap. But several people did have things that were local. And so, good on them. I mean, I think I made at least 10 masks out of that black and white material, so.
Incredible. And obviously you didn't have to share your square with yourself, but did you also do the same sort of quarantining and Lysoling of your square?
Not from myself. but when the material came in, yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
So the other part of this piece is the scrapbook. Was that your idea?
Well, we had the extra pieces, and I was like, you know, Terry said, you're not going to be able to keep that, so, you know, what are you going to do with it? And I was like, you know, everybody sent these little letters and messages, and so, okay, we'll just make a little book. And my grandmother used to make fabric-covered photo books, so I was like, I could do that. I mean, that makes sense, you know. So that was a project that I'd done before. Like, let's do that, and we'll just kind of make it a companion to the quilt itself.
So the cover, or those were extra squares that you couldn't make fit?
First of all, it's already pretty massive.
Yeah.
So adding an extra row, it would have been difficult for Terry in the first place. And some of them just were wonky, or for one reason or another, couldn't be used, so.
So you turned them into the cover.
So we made them into something. Like, we had one lady who was adamant that her piece be sent back to her. So, fine, you know, whatever. Because I had messed her, it's not the right size. I won't be able to go into it. Mm-hmm. She was upset, but sorry, you should have followed directions.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about the putting the scrapbook together.
I've got a bit of a background in, like, using Microsoft Publisher and a couple different things, so it wasn't difficult for me to actually make the body of it itself. And I'd done a couple of the covered books before, so that been done. There were so many, like, notes that people had written, because, you know, we were all watching the governor every day, and a lot of us were feeling that same thing. And it was amazing to me how many of these women may not agree with his political views, but at the same time went, you know, at this point we're together on this. So besides whatever you feel politically, you kind of had to go, yeah, this guy's got it rough. I mean, but then everybody just kind of came together, and there were so many notes that said, you know, I may not agree with this, but I got your back, man, you know. So I cried every day. I would just read them and cry, so.
Yeah. Did you leave a note in the book?
I did.
Can you tell us, like, 5,000 feet view of what you wrote to the governor?
I did, like, a cover letter for it. And I started my business, Threads of Hope, because I felt like it kind of worked with the whole quilt thing. I didn't really want to be a business, but I was like, we are, at that moment in time, we were definitely linked together. Everybody in that group, everybody, it seems like worldwide, was linked together by just one thread of hope. Like, we're going to get through this, and that was about all we had. You know, we didn't know how bad it would be, how bad it wouldn't be, but you had to have hope. And I had taken a pallet and made a yard sign out of lights that said hope on the front. Coincidentally, a local poet saw it in the middle of the night and wrote a poem about it. So I was like, that was really weird. But I was like, okay, that hope is what we have. And that was the, like, the theme was the thread that we all kind of were woven together with.
That's incredible. Can you describe the feelings of being involved in this group?
Overwhelmed. It was overwhelming. It really, I didn't think that anybody would really want to participate. And then people were like, hey, start a group. Hey, you know, and we've kind of kept together a little bit, not as active, but enough to, you know, some of them are local to me and I'll see them, like Shanna, she came by and did a farmer's market booth for, you know, voting. And it's just, I don't know. I'm trying to put words together here to make it. Oh, it was just overwhelming. The support that came out from all over. It was touching.
Yeah. The support that came from all over. Can you talk a little bit more about how you all communicated the sort of community within the group?
Well, I put out on top that we're not talking politics. Not going to happen. That's just not going to happen. You know, believe what you want to believe, but that's not what we're here for. You know, but we communicated within the group. There would be messages. People would message me and ask me questions. I mean, and it stayed really active for a while. Even like after Christmas, we did an after Christmas gift swap where we all made something, and that was kind of fun. I made an apron. It was cute. Gosh, I'm trying to think, like, what other, I mean, it wasn't like close knit, but there were so many people that were active at the time. Like, several were in a group in Lexington that were making scrub caps and masks and stuff for like the hospital donations. So it was hard at the time to balance, you know, doing my donation work and organizing with this other thing. And that was kind of overwhelming too. So I'm sure everybody else was having that same sort of, and everybody was like excited. So
yeah. You said you made an apron. What did you receive?
Heidi got my name. We did like a secret Santa elf thing. And she made like, it was a mug mat and some coasters. And I actually used the coasters on my Christmas tree. My Christmas tree's theme this year was made in Kentucky. Oh. So it was all handmade ornaments from different artisans around the state.
That's incredible. Okay, so you get all of these pieces, and then what do you do with them for the quilt?
I was so happy the day I gave them to Terry. I was so happy. I had to iron them just to make sure they were nice and straight. But that's where Terry took the reins. Like, me and her communicated a lot about, you know, how this is going to look, how it's going to fit. Bless her heart. At one point, she had it all together, and a wind blew open her door, and all those squares just went flying in the breeze. So she had it laid out, and I would not have wanted to be near anyone with that kind of. So that's kind of where my journey ended on that, other than, you know, talking with them about, you know, how this is going to be laid out, and, you know, what colors we're going to use on this, and measurements, and that in itself was difficult. I'm not math-minded, so doing a quilt terrifies me, but I was willing to do it, darn it, I was willing. I'm just glad I didn't have to. She's a pro, she's professional, she's got a studio.
How did you get in contact with the governor? Were you the person who got in contact with the governor's office?
Yes. I don't remember who exactly it was I contacted, but I was like, hey, we're doing this thing, we'd like to present it. And at the time I was like, I don't even know if they'd allow anybody in here, so, you know, it may just be, leave it on the front door, ding dong, you know. But I contacted, I was like, you know, hey, we have this quilt that we made, and, you know, we'd like to present it. And next thing you know, like, hey, come on, It was the day after my birthday. I was like, this is the best birthday present ever.
Yeah, tell me more about that. Tell me about presenting the quilt to Governor Beshear.
Okay. I don't have a problem with talking to people. I get a little nervous off the top, but I froze. I did. I just froze up. And I'd gotten there on time. I didn't realize that Terry, she had the quilt. She showed up early. I'm freaking out because I think I'm late. She's already in the building. She's not answering my messages. I'm just like, ah. And I get in and I just froze up.
It wow. Was, what made you freeze?
We were seeing him every day. So he was kind of like this, like, oh, kind of presence. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I did that. But it was like, you know, he's this big, huge. I think he touched everybody in different ways. Mm-hmm. It was, I don't know, it was just I was emotional. I just couldn't talk. I did the same thing when I met my man crush at Comic-Con 1 year. I just couldn't talk. So.
Yeah, you said it was emotional. Can you tell me a little bit about those emotions? What were you feeling?
Well, I hadn't actually seen the quilt in its entirety, other than a couple pictures that were sent. So it was like between the, I thought I was late, you know, all that mess. And then here's Andy. And, you know, seeing the quilt for the first time and all these, like, and apparently he was, like, impressed too. So then I was like, oh. I don't know whether I should feel humbled or gracious or proud or what. There were just so many emotions. I didn't even know how to deal with my own. What's going on in here? But he was so nice. And, like, he was like, it's okay. It's I'm just a person. No, you're not. You're not.
Do you remember anything that he said to y'all or his response to the quilt?
He was just like, oh, this is so special. I kept on saying, this is so special. And I was like, yeah, it kind of is. And this is something, like, so many people were taking part in, and it was representative of so many people that didn't take part in the actual quilt itself, but represented everybody who was out there on a sewing machine and trying to help their fellow human being. And that, it was just a lot to take in at that moment. And eventually, I did, like, open up a little bit, you know. But.
And it was you and Terry Smith, the mm-hmm. quilter, and did anyone else attend?
No.
It was just
us two. They said we can only have two, so.
And because you two did the bulk of the work, how was that decision made?
Well, Terry had the quilt.
Okay.
So she
de facto.
She had to be there.
Yeah.
And I guess I was the one who reached out. But Lisa did some beautiful embroidery work. I've only recently started doing the embroidery work, so I respect what she did so much now to be able to come up with the sizing and make everything work. There's a lot more to it than it looks like, so.
Yeah, can you describe the embroidery on the quilt?
Oh, well, we went back and forth as to what colors to use on it. We definitely wanted to use green, for sure, because, you know, everybody had their green lights and, you know, for that to be indicative of the whole, everything we were going through. But we finally felt, okay, let's do this cream with the green embroidery and put all the counties, because we had so many different people from so many different counties that took part in it, and whether or not their piece does represent their county or their area, it's gonna say it. And, you know, people from all over in every state, every county, every city were at home sewing, so. We're trying to be representative of everybody who helped in those efforts.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about the time after the quilt was delivered? So let's say October to December 2020. How were you feeling?
Oh, I was kind of glad it was over. Actually, it was a lot. We were prepping for Halloween. Halloween's big in my neighborhood, like big, big. And it was interesting trying to think of, how do we socially distance Halloween? How do you do this? How do you, like, the kids were all so depressed because there was no school, and that's, like, that's like the one holiday kids are like, yes. So we go all out for Halloween. Like, we're 26 inflatables and lights and everything. So we ended up doing like a candy slide. And but I was just kind of happy the project was over and still reeling from everything that had happened with the presentation. And that when he talked about it on his presser, like, I was so glad I was recording that day. I was like, he said it looks like love. That's what he said. So we actually had shirts made for the group and masks made for the group. We had custom printed a photo of the quilt and put it on the mask. So, and then we had shirts that had like pieces of the quilt and it said, it looks like love. And we made our own little swag.
Yeah. And sent it out to folks who wanted it.
Anybody in the group who asked for, you know, we got them. I think, was it Lisa, I think, did the screen printing for the shirt and I did the design for the mask material. So.
Do you know how many you sent out? Do you have?
I don't recall. Lisa would know the numbers on the shirts. I think I did about 30 of the masks. Coincidentally, like, people in our group who went to go get their vaccines would wear their shirt and wear their mask to go get their vaccine. So, like, it'd pop up, hey, you know, I was representing today. It's like, I got my vaccine.
How'd that make you feel?
Super happy. I was so happy to hear there was a vaccine up.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about that December announcement of the vaccine and your feelings around that.
Well, I think I was like everybody else who was just sitting there going, okay, we're still sitting in our house until it's my turn. So, like, I take it on with the farmer's market being their healthy at work person because, you know, everybody had to have one. So I took that on. It made sense. I was the one making the mask. I may as well do that. That was so much elation, just to be like, there is a light at the end of this tunnel, and we are going to get out of this eventually. So, baby steps. We all just kind of waited until we got our turn.
While you were waiting, did you make anything else that was shared with officials? Was the quilt the end?
No. No. Well, we still had a couple extra pieces of quilt material that was left. So I did a series of bears for, I'm sure people have seen the memory bears, like little stuffed animals. I did a series of bears for people who had shown up on the pressers and, you know, been notified, like Michael Brown, who good on his move. I'm so happy for him. We did Dr. Stack. We did Virginia and, you know, everybody got a bear. We made one for the first lady. They were just adorable.
And how did you get those?
And they all had little stories. They had backstories like American Girl dolls. Like, I made them backstories.
Tell me more about the stories.
The one for Dr. Steck, the lady who had sent that square in, she had made some masks for a friend in Maryland who was in a facility that needed, and so she's like, I'm so glad I did it on Dr. Stacks. And his backstory was he was Doc, you know, Doc. And Doc loves to take care of people. And, you know, they each had their little, like, the governor's wife. Hers was Mama Bear, of course, you know. And there was, like, kids. And she was doing the coverings for kids things. So it had, like, children's sorts of materials on it. So, I mean, everything was really kind of, it was weird how everything just kind of worked out exactly right for the right person. So.
And did you mail those or hand deliver? How were those delivered?
How did I deliver those? I think I mailed those. Yeah, they were mailed in a very large box.
Yeah. Did you receive any reply? Has anybody?
The bear ended up on one of the pressers. Okay. Dr. Stack was showing off his little things that people had sent him to support him, and I would not want his job either. So, and I think the governor said, when you think you've seen it all, it's Dr. Steck and a blue teddy bear. So, I was like, yep.
That's great. How did it, when you would see these things on the presser, how did that feel?
Oh, I was ecstatic. That's the word, ecstatic. It's like, you know, it was so great when you're watching these things to see, like, the kids doing their chalk art and, you know, people going a step above and beyond. It's like, it makes you feel like I'm part of this great Kentucky that people are, there are seriously people out there who want to help other people and want to make other people's lives better. So
how did the group react when they would see these things?
I did miss a couple. I did miss a couple pressers that people were like, hey, did you see it? Did you see it? You know, no, I didn't. But everyone was super supportive. And yeah, with the one where they actually did the presentation of the quilt on the presser, like everybody in the group was like, oh, I see mine. Oh, that's incredible. I can't wait till we actually kind of like go somewhere as a group and, you know, get like a group photo, and that'll be super fun. I don't think we could have everybody at the same time. That's a big photo, but.
Is there a desire to do that?
Yes, they have definitely said, you know, I want to see it and would love to be able to get together. So
yeah,
we thought about it, but, you know, I think at that point that we were just coming up with Omicron or something. One of the surges were upon us, so.
How has the community continued to support each other?
It's kind of fizzled at this point, but here and again, you know, somebody will find something amazing and we'll share with each other. I think there was a lot of, I've met several people that I should know this person. We have like 6 people that are friends with their friends on Facebook. How come I don't know this person? And I'm sure other people in the group have had that same situation. Like, how come I don't know you? But I've met a lot of great people just in my community that I should have known they were there. And now I do know they're there. So that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. So the governor described all of us as Team Kentucky. Can you define Team Kentucky for me?
With everything that's happened in the last several years, well, I think, if we're going to talk about what Team Kentucky is, it's, oh, it's rolling up on somebody's front porch and them asking you to come inside. That's, you know, asking you, do you want a glass of tea or something? It's that feeling that, you know, we're there for each other. We're supposed to be there for each other. And that was, I'm going to cry, super evident with don't do this to me, super evident with, you know, the effects of after the tornadoes and how everybody just came together. And, I mean, even though money was tight, people were willing to go, hey, you know, I can throw in $50 for these kids to have a Christmas this year. Or I can, that's what Team Kentucky is. I think that feeling that we're here for each other, even if we may not like each other sometimes, that's a great big huge family.
Yeah. How has the quilt and your work with it contributed to Team Kentucky?
I don't know where. I would love to know what the other mess makers that were in the group think about it when they see it. I don't really know where that dice is going to land yet.
What do you think about it when you see it?
Oh, it's overwhelming. I mean, you saw what I looked at. I was just kind of like, it's just too pretty to touch. I mean, there's so many emotions that go into everything that happened that even though the quilt was the start of when COVID happened, it was just off the front. Everything that happened after that, then the feelings that you get when you look at that and go, you know, if somebody would have chosen to put that mask on that day, things might have been different for that family. Like, told you.
Yeah.
So as far as how I feel like it's part of Team Kentucky, it wasn't the quilt itself, but what it represents. So that's how it fits in.
And what does it represent to you?
5,000 masks. You know, 5,000 people I may have helped. And I think we said at the time we gave it to the governor, we had a total mask count of around 80,000 and just in our group. And that was from when we first knew about what it was up until October. That's a lot for a small group to.
Yeah.
About 80,000.
Wow. It's about
4,000. I was nowhere around 5,000 myself at that point, so.
Are you still making masks?
Thank God, no.
When did you stop making masks?
I think I probably made, I do make them now still when somebody asks. I do have a couple people who are like immunocompromised. And I'm like, yeah, I'd like to have something special for a special occasion or this or that. But I stopped mainstream making them about 8 months ago. Sounds about right.
So like October.
Time has kind of flown, like in a way that, like, was that yesterday or 2 years ago? I don't remember.
What led you to stop making them?
Between there being so much of a vaccinated community in most places, and I know in my city, in Berea, we're glad to have a very liberal content. So there were a lot of people who were vaccinated. The need wasn't there anymore. There was an ability for people to go out and purchase there. So I thought maybe I'll do something else with my time.
Okay, so we're in May of 2022. How are you feeling now?
Oh, relieved. I am loving doing what I'm doing now. I wake up and go into my little room of happiness and look at my material and figure out what I'm going to make and do it. And that's, it brings me joy. So, and as far as the COVID stuff, I hope it's in the rear view for good. You know, you never know what may come of it. You know, it seems things are on the rise a little bit right now. I still watch that. I don't know if we'll ever stop watching that, but.
You still watch the number? Do you still watch the governor?
When he comes on, because I have my own room that I work in, and I work from home, so if I get, I'm on his notifications list. If I get a notification, yeah, I'll turn him on. Heck yeah.
And do you have that same feeling watching him in May of 22 as you did in, say, May of 20?
Some yes, some no. I mean, like, I don't feel what people need as much upbringing as they need as far as, you know, upbringing their spirits, upbringing their hope, because he was great about that. But I think it's trended more towards upbringing the state as a whole financially and economically, and I'm glad we're growing like that. I mean, leaps and bounds we've done, so. I mean, it's the same feeling, and the feeling of, okay, we're going somewhere, something good is happening, you know, we can all be part of this process. So, yeah, I'm a fan. I'm a fan.
So you sew full-time now. Mm-hmm. Do you think you would have done that if not for...
No.
Okay. But it brings you joy now?
It does. Like, when I first started, like, doing the whole mask thing, I had a little, the size of this table, like, 4x6 table, and that's what I would use. And then my husband's company bought a building, and he moved out of our home office, and he was like, here, you take it. So I made my own little joyful spot, and it's what it's become. So, and I found a place at the farmer's market that I love, and I love the people, and never thought I'd be an extrovert in that way, but a pandemic made me an extrovert. That's odd.
That's incredible. Do you have any sort of final recollections, things you would want to share about the quilt or about the project?
There was so much, and I'm so glad that people wanted to help, because I didn't think anybody would be interested. I mean, I just thought, you know, people are going to go, this is stupid, you're not going to do anything. I've never been a wave maker at all, so for me to do anything that was somewhat incredible, it seemed like it was far-fetched, but people wanted to help, and it just made me feel like it was such a close community, even though I'd only met a couple of these people ever in the history of my life. But everybody just wanted to help, and it was an amazing feeling of unity. So that I'll have forever, I think.